Welcome to Behind the Scams, the podcast where we peel back the layers of the world's most sophisticated frauds and expose the psychology, technology, and global criminal networks driving them. Today's episode takes us deep inside one of the most sobering assessments of modern crime ever released. The State of Scams in the UK, 2025 report from the Global Anti-Scam Alliance. According to this report, 76% of UK adults have already encountered a scam, and the average person faces a staggering 168 scam attempts every single year, nearly one every other day. It's a relentless, silent assault waged through the devices we use to live, work, and connect. But statistics alone don't tell the whole story. Behind each number is a human being coping with financial loss, emotional damage, and the deeply personal violation that comes from being targeted by criminals who now operate more like multinational corporations than individual bad actors. Using AI tools, voice cloning, scam factories, psychological profiling, and industrial-scale organization, these networks specialize in overwhelming their victims before they even realize they're under attack. That's why awareness is the most powerful weapon we have, and that's why we're here. Nick and Sue are going to unpack this report, break down the trends, the red flags, and the emotional impact, and walk you through what these findings really mean for everyday people. So settle in. The truth is unsettling, the stakes are high, and the fight against global fraud has never been more urgent. This is Behind the Scams. Episode 41, UK GASA Report.
Imagine a crime that affects 3 out of every 4 people you know. Your parents, your friends, your colleagues at work. A crime that doesn't break down your door, but slides silently into your life through your phone or your computer.
It's a chilling thought, isn't it? Welcome everyone to Behind the Scams. I'm Sue.
And I'm Nick. For those of you who are new, I spent the better part of 2 decades in federal law enforcement, chasing down everything from financial fraud to cybercrime.
And I'm his wife, who has heard a ton of war stories from those days, but those stories never get old. Not only are they exciting, but we can all learn something from them. And of course, Nick always weaves a war story or two into our podcast episodes, so stay tuned because I'm sure he will share a few in this episode. It's great to have you all with us.
Glad to hear you don't mind my crazy war stories, honey. Today we're diving into something pretty heavy. We've got our hands on a brand new report. It's called The State of Scams in the UK 2025 Report from the Global Anti-Scam Alliance, or GASA, as they are commonly referred to as, and the numbers, the stories in this report, they're staggering.
They really are. We've been going through it for the last week or two, and honestly, it paints a picture of a country under siege from scammers. So we wanted to dedicate this entire episode to breaking it down. So for our UK listeners, you're going to really want to pay attention.
That's so right, Sue. So let's get into it. The first thing that just jumps off the page is the sheer scale of the problem. Forget what you think you know. According to this report, 76% of adults in the UK have encountered a scam. 3/4 of the population.
Wow, 76%? That's almost everybody.
It's an epidemic, and the frequency is what gets me. The report breaks it down to an average of 168 scam encounters per person per year.
Wait, say that again? 168?
168. That means, on average, every single person is dealing with a scam attempt almost every other day. A suspicious email, a dodgy text, a weird phone call.
Every other day? That's just relentless. It feels like a constant background noise of modern life now, doesn't it? You just get so used to deleting things and blocking numbers.
And that's the danger. It's a desensitizing tactic, whether intentional or not. It's a constant barrage, And all it takes is one moment where you're tired, you're distracted, you're waiting for a real delivery, and you click.
Mm-hmm. And the report says that over 67% of people, 67%, have had an actual scam experience in the last year. So not just an attempt they ignored, but something they engage with on some level.
Right. And for those people, it happens on average 2.2 times. So it's not a one-off. If you get hit once, you're likely to be targeted again. You're on a list somewhere.
That's horrible. It makes you feel so vulnerable. It truly is frightening.
It really is. And that vulnerability comes with a price tag. And this is the number that makes you sit up straight. In the last year, scammers stole 9.4 billion pounds from people in the UK.
9.4 billion. With a B.
With a B. Let's put that in perspective. That's more than the government's entire budget for science and research. It is a torrent of money leaving the pockets of ordinary people and going directly to criminals.
It's hard to even comprehend a number that big. It feels abstract.
Okay, well, let's make it personal then. The report found that 20% of adults, 1 in 5, lost money, and the average loss per person was 878 pounds. Let's call it 880 quid.
Okay, that I can understand. Nearly 900 pounds. For a lot of families, that's a month's mortgage payment. That's the food budget for weeks. That is a devastating amount of money to lose.
It's life-changing. I remember a scam victim I was assisting a few months ago. She contacted me through our nonprofit's website. She's a retired teacher, absolutely lovely woman, sharp as a tack. She got drawn into an investment scam. And it wasn't a badly spelled email, Sue. This was sophisticated. Everything was so convincing.
Mm-hmm. I remember you talking about her.
Yep. Well, these scammers had a glossy website, fake prospectuses, glowing testimonials. They even had a phone number with a real charming person on the other end who walked her through everything. She invested a little at first, saw a return, and then they convinced her to move her entire pension pot, over 100,000 pounds.
Oh, Nick. No, these type of stories are so sad. Unfortunately, you have so many of them to talk about.
Yeah, I really do. Well, in this case, one day, the website was gone, the phone number was dead, and so was her retirement. The devastation. It wasn't just the money, it was the absolute violation of her trust.
And that's the other side of this coin, isn't it? The part that this report really shines a light on. It's not just about the pounds and pence, it's the emotional cost.
Exactly. It is. It's profound. And it's something that wasn't fully appreciated in law enforcement for a long time. We were focused on the money trail, the evidence, the convictions, but the human cost. It's like a secondary crime scene. The scammers don't just steal your money, they steal your sense of safety, your ability to trust other people, and sometimes even your ability to trust yourself.
It says nearly two-thirds of victims, 63%, felt very or somewhat stressed by the experience. I mean, of course they did, but this next stat is the one that really got me. Over a third of victims, 34%, said the scam had a moderate to significant impact on their mental well-being.
That's a huge number. We're talking about serious, lasting psychological harm. Not to mention the financial damage, the emotional toll can be staggering.
It is. It's the shame people feel, the embarrassment. They blame themselves, thinking, how could I have been so stupid? And that can lead to anxiety, depression. People become withdrawn. They don't want to tell their family. They don't want to tell their friends. It's an incredibly isolating experience. The report you mentioned highlights that feeling of violation brilliantly. It compares the psychological impact to that of a home burglary. even if nothing of tangible value is taken, the knowledge that someone has been in your private space, your sanctuary, is deeply unsettling. A digital scam is precisely the same. An invasion of your private digital life, which for many of us is just as intimate as our physical home.
The self-blame is the criminal's best friend. It keeps people quiet. But as we saw with that teacher story, we're not talking about simple tricks anymore. These are targeted psychological operations designed to bypass our rational brains.
So how are they reaching us? What are the main types of scams people are falling for? I think that's important for our listeners to know, something we all need to know.
You're right, Sue. Every one of us need to know what these scammers are peddling the most. Well, the undisputed king is the shopping scam. That accounts for 45% of all scam experiences in the last year. You see an ad, you buy something, and it either never shows up, or what does arrive is, well, you know, a cheap piece of junk. You know, at least with a burglary, you can install a new lock, a better alarm system. You can take concrete steps to feel safe again. But how do you install a new lock on your own judgment, on your own trust? That's the insidious wound these criminals leave behind. It makes people second guess every email, every phone call, every text. It creates a state of constant low-level anxiety and hypervigilance that is utterly exhausting.
Oh, I can totally see that. You're scrolling through Facebook or Instagram and an ad pops up for the perfect dress or some new kitchen gadget and it's 70% off. It creates that sense of urgency, the fear of missing out.
That's the hook. Right behind that, at 37%, are the unexpected money scams. The classic, you've won the lottery, or a distant relative left you an inheritance. They've been around forever, but they still work.
Which must be so draining to live with. It chips away at your confidence, especially for older victims who are so often and unfairly portrayed as naive or incompetent. But in reality, they're often targeted precisely because they're from a generation that was raised to be more trusting, more polite on the phone, less cynical. Scammers twist that good nature into a vulnerability. And that desire for a windfall is powerful, but scammers also prey on the opposite emotion, fear. I'm thinking of the impersonation scams, which seem to be getting more common. And they're often paired with romance scams, aren't they? That's another huge, heartbreaking category the report spends a lot of time on. The unexpected money is often dangled as the solution to a problem that will finally allow an online love interest, whom the victim has never met, to come and be with them.
They're a huge problem. This is when the criminal pretends to be from an official authoritative organization. The tax office is the classic one. You get a call or a very official looking email saying you have an unpaid tax bill, and if you don't pay immediately, a warrant will be issued for your arrest. I can't tell you how many times I've received these types of calls, which is hilarious to me, because if they only knew that I was very familiar with how our government operates, since I spent 25 years investigating financial crimes.
That is funny, Nick. But you know what? They don't care who they are talking to. They're just throwing out something and see what sticks or may to happen to work. Even if you confronted them and told them who you were, they would just hang up.
You're right, but that's fine with me. Gets them off of my back. But the delivery methods for these scams are exactly what you'd expect. The report is crystal clear. Email is still number one, used in 64% of encounters. But right on its heels are phone calls at 53% and SMS text messages at 52%. It's a three-pronged attack.
That's terrifying. Your immediate reaction is panic, not logic. You're not thinking about whether the tax office would really call you and demand payment in iTunes gift cards.
It's a devastatingly effective combination, a 1-2 punch of greed and love. Romance scams are a slow burn. This isn't a one-time trick. It's a long-term, calculated campaign of psychological manipulation. These criminals spend weeks, sometimes months, grooming a victim. They build a deep emotional connection. They learn their victim's hopes, their dreams, their insecurities, their lonely moments. They become a digital confidant.
Exactly. They short-circuit your critical thinking. Another big one is the bank fraud department scam. They call you, sometimes even spoofing the bank's actual phone number, and say, "Ma'am, we've detected suspicious activity on your account. To secure your funds, you need to move them to a new, safe account immediately." And of course, that safe account is one they control. Oh, that is a really big one here in the United States too.
That's right, and these scams, they use kindness, politeness, and the willingness to help as tool to be leveraged against victims. And that's the true cruelty of it. They call a person, most likely a senior, and use the bank fraud department as a way to open the door. Then they kill them with kindness and a desire to help them get it straightened out.
So they're using the bank's own authority against them. It's so cynical. They create the problem, the fear, and then immediately offer the solution. Pretty deceptive. These scammers are so skilled at social engineering that it paints such a frightening picture.
It's a masterclass in manipulation. The key takeaway for listeners is that no legitimate organization, not the police, not your bank, not the tax office, will ever pressure you to make an immediate payment over the phone or ask you to move your money to another account for safekeeping. They just don't operate that way. And this is the part that makes it so dangerous, is that the heat top three platforms where people encounter scams are WhatsApp, Gmail, and Facebook, all tied at 34%. What's dangerous is that so many of us use one or more of these platforms.
So these scammers don't use some dark corner of the internet. It's the places we use every single day to talk to our kids, our friends, to share family photos.
That's the strategy. They're embedding themselves in trusted environments. Your guard is lower when you're on WhatsApp than when you're on some random website you've never heard of. They're weaponizing our familiarity. And once that deep trust is cemented, the request for money begin. It's never a big, shocking demand at first. It's subtle. "Darling, I need money for a flight to come see you, but my card was unexpectedly declined. Or I've had a sudden medical emergency. I'm stuck in a foreign country and need help with customs fees to get my equipment back." Each request is an emergency wrapped in a story of love and desperation.
It just feels like there's nowhere safe to hide.
There isn't. Which brings me to the part of this that, from my old job's perspective, is the most deeply frustrating. The reporting. Or rather, the lack of it.
Oh, people aren't telling the police? I know from your law enforcement experience, you must find this so frustrating.
I do. People just don't realize how important reporting to law enforcement is. But unfortunately, a lot of them aren't. And the number one reason why, cited by 37% of people who never report a scam, is that they just don't think it will make a difference. They believe no action will be taken. I think that most people believe that if there is no indication of instant results, then nothing is being done. They don't realize how important the intelligence they are providing really is.
Great point, Nick. From your perspective, coming from a law enforcement background, you know firsthand how important this intelligence can be. I hear you constantly telling victims who reach out to us to please report it to law enforcement. Sometimes it sounds like you are begging them, but can you blame them? I mean, I was looking at another stat in the report that seems to back that feeling up. It says that of the people who do report it, 63% said that either no action was taken or they were simply unsure of the outcome. They never heard anything back.
I know. And that's a systemic failure. It absolutely is. Law enforcement may not take any action, or all. But behind the scenes, this information is probably being used to deconflict or document a large-scale scamming operation during the course of building a case. People just really never see something that is tangible to them.
No, it feels like you're just shouting into the void. You take the time, you feel awful, you file a report, and then crickets. I can understand why people just think, why bother?
If you remember Sue, last year I was helping a victim whose story was truly heartbreaking. She is a widow in her 60s whose children were grown and lived far away. She was intelligent, successful, but profoundly lonely. She met a man online, an engineer, supposedly working on an oil rig. He was handsome, attentive, worldly, everything she'd been missing. Over the course of a year, he drained her entire life savings, her retirement, everything she had worked for. But she didn't want to tell anyone, not her friends, not her family, and not law enforcement. Even after I strongly encouraged her to do so, and I get the cynicism, I really do, but what people don't see is the back end. Every report, even if it doesn't lead to an arrest in your specific case, is a data point. It's a piece of the puzzle. We see a cluster of reports about a certain type of scam, using a certain phone number, targeting a certain area.
Her story is just devastating. The level of manipulation is hard to fathom. It's not just a trick, it's a deep psychological game. It builds a bigger picture.
A much bigger picture. It helps us identify the gangs, the infrastructure, the patterns. When people don't report, we're flying blind. It's a vicious cycle of underreporting leading to a perceived lack of action, which leads to more underreporting. The deception used by most scammers is what is commonly referred to as social engineering. It's the art of manipulating people into performing actions or divulging confidential information. These criminals are experts in it. They're exploiting fundamental human psychological triggers that we all have. And they know that. The odds of someone reporting it are slim to none.
Exactly right. So if people feel that law enforcement can't always provide a direct resolution, what about the giant multi-trillion dollar corporations whose platforms are being used to commit these crimes? The tech companies, the social media networks, the banks. They need to be held accountable or provide proof that they are doing something to help. It seems like a crisis of confidence in the system and these tech firms.
It is a crisis. But back to the psychology used by these scammers, and they are fully aware that the trigger of authority is very persuasive. They fully realize that people tend to obey authority figures, even if they're only perceived authority figures, like a fake tax agent or a bank fraud department. It's like these scammers attend scammer colleges or scam universities and take coursework in social engineering or manipulation. I remember a woman on the phone that these scammers are really good. Her response was, "How dare you praise them like that?" I had to tell her, "I'm not praising them. I am just not underestimating them," which is what a lot of people do.
So scammers are not just hacking computers. They're hacking people. So now, Nick, what can these huge platforms do to help stem the flow of scams?
Multi-billion pound question. And it's a hornet's nest, but a crucial one. For years, many of these companies have hidden behind safe harbor provisions in legislation, essentially saying, "We're just a neutral platform. We're not responsible for what our users do." But that argument is starting to wear very, very thin. The report makes it clear that these companies are not passive bystanders. They are the environment where the crime occurs. They built the playground, and they need to take some responsibility for what happens in it. The human brain is the most vulnerable operating system there is. They know that people want to be helpful, they want to be loved, they're afraid of getting in trouble. They aren't breaking down a firewall with code. They're talking their way past the firewall in your head. So these platforms need to accept that their own platform was being used as tool to conduct crimes and do as much as possible to assist their users and law enforcement. People are losing confidence in these platforms and their safety when utilizing them. And while the platforms are struggling to earn that confidence back, the criminals are evolving at lightning speed. And that's the next big thing from this report, the emerging threats. These so-called emerging threats have never been moving so fast as they are in this current technological environment.
You mean artificial intelligence? We're hearing so much about AI these days.
Yes, and it's much more than just the buzzword, Sue. It's a complete game changer for these criminals, a paradigm shift. For years, the number one piece of advice we gave people was look for bad spelling and grammar.
And well, it's no secret that social media platforms profit from engagement. A scam advertisement on Facebook or Instagram, designed to steal from people, still generates advertising revenue for the platform. A scammer using Gmail or WhatsApp to communicate with victims is still counted as an active user, a data point that makes the company more valuable. There's a fundamental financial incentive to not look too closely, isn't there? And then you have scams that prey on a completely different kind of vulnerability. Not loneliness, but fear, like the tech support scams.
With generative AI, a scammer in a non-English speaking country can produce a perfectly written, contextually aware, emotionally manipulative email in flawless English in about 5 seconds. The barrier to entry has just been obliterated.
There's a deep-seated conflict of interest, certainly. And the same goes for the banks who facilitate the transfer of stolen funds. The report calls for much stronger know your customer rules and more sophisticated real-time fraud detection. Why should it be so easy for a criminal enterprise to open 20 bank accounts with flimsy fake IDs? Why aren't more red flags raised when a pensioner's account, which normally has a predictable pattern of spending, suddenly starts wiring thousands of pounds to a new overseas account?
You know what? How many times have we heard from victims how they had just been innocently browsing the internet and suddenly their screen is taken over by a pop-up? There are loud alarm sounds, flashing red warnings, and a message saying, "Warning, your computer is infected with the Zeus virus. Your banking information is at risk. Call this toll-free number immediately to prevent data loss." It's pure theater, designed to induce panic and bypass rational thought. This happened to me recently. Of course, I knew right away what was going on, but I had inadvertently clicked on a link and suddenly it was like I was in Las Vegas on a slot machine. It was unnerving, and it actually took me some time to get the malicious tab closed. So if something like that gets me flustered, someone who is a tech nerd, imagine what it's doing to seniors out there who are tech challenged.
So true, Nick. But back to artificial intelligence. This is a game changer for scammers, right?
It really is a major game changer. Think about deepfakes, voice cloning. They can take a 10-second video clip of your son or daughter that you innocently posted on Facebook, clone his or her voice, and call you. And you'll hear them crying, saying they've been in an accident or arrested, and they need you to send money right now.
There's a lot of talk in the UK and Europe about new regulations like the Online Safety Bill that aim to hold these companies more legally and financially accountable. The idea is to shift the burden to force them to be more proactive in taking down fraudulent content and closing accounts associated with scams, rather than waiting for users to report it. Ugh, voice cloning is absolutely terrifying. How are you supposed to fight that? Your own ears are lying to you. It is a difficult environment we find ourselves in, this modern world of artificial intelligence. But the Online Safety Bill sounds like a good thing.
It's a necessary step in the right direction, but from an enforcement perspective, it's often a game of whack-a-mole. You take down one fake website, two more pop up using a slightly different address. The real fundamental change has to be systemic. It means designing systems that are safer by default. It means a cultural shift within these organizations from a reactive, clean up the mess approach to a proactive, prevent the mess from happening one. And that costs significant money in terms of developers and content moderators, which is where the corporate resistance comes from.
It's terrifying. And this isn't just a few tech-savvy kids in their basements anymore. This technology is being deployed by major criminal organizations. The report explicitly mentions scam factories, particularly in Southeast Asia and West Africa. Scam factories? We are hearing a lot about those lately. In fact, you've posted some real interesting videos on Scam TV about these scam farms and the large-scale human trafficking that is involved.
That's right. And these scam farms are exactly what they sound like. Just imagine a massive illegal cost center in an anonymous office building. They have hundreds of people, many of whom are victims of human trafficking themselves, forced to work 12-hour shifts, running these scams around the clock. They have scripts, they have targets, they have managers. It is industrialized crime on a global scale. Yes, that's a particularly cruel one. It hits people at the start of their careers, when they're optimistic, and maybe a bit desperate for a good opportunity. The scam usually starts with the posting on a legitimate job site for a dream role. Great pay, remote work, amazing benefits. Yes, and these ads are very alluring to these victims. They are hardworking people who are ready to go out and earn money. So when they see these ads, naturally they are interested.
That's right. Again, they are preying on vulnerable targets. And the report details the horrific human cost within these factories, right? It's not just the victims they're calling in the UK, but the people forced to make the calls are often victims themselves, trapped in this criminal underworld. It is really devastating on both ends of the spectrum.
It is. This scam starts out with a so-called recruiter conducting a very convincing but entirely fake interview, often just over text or a messaging app. Then they offer the victim the job. The victim is ecstatic, but then comes the sting. The scammer says, to get you set up, you'll need to purchase your own work equipment, a specific high-end laptop and software through our approved vendor. Don't worry, you'll be fully reimbursed in your first paycheck. Well, guess what? That first paycheck never happens because the whole process is a scam from start to finish. And of course, the approved vendor is a fake website run by the scammer, and the paycheck never comes.
So when you get a scam call, you're not just up against one person trying to trick you. You're up against an entire criminal corporation. A well-structured criminal organization that should not be underestimated. I guess we could call them a scam cartel?
Yes, cartel is good analogy, but this cartel, or corporation, is armed with military-grade psychological tactics and cutting-edge AI. That's the modern battlefield. The days of Nigerian prince scams are long gone. Now, from the perspective of the victims that the scam farms, it's a modern form of slavery, plain and simple. Young, often well-educated people are lured from their home countries, places like China, Vietnam, Malaysia, with promises of legitimate high-paying tech jobs, in places like Cambodia, Laos, or Myanmar. They get there, their passports are taken away, and they're forced into these guarded compounds, often ringed with barbed wire and armed guard.
It all sounds so frightening, like some kind of scary movie. Wow. Okay. That is a lot to take in, Nick. Hearing it all laid out like that, the scale, the financial cost, the emotional damage, the terrifying new technology, it just feels overwhelming.
It is overwhelming. First, you have the massive scam farms full of people forced into slavery and then forced to scam people on the other side of the world. Then you have the UK victims who are out thousands of pounds and a job that never existed. Additionally, the scammers can also use the information taken from the UK victims as a way to harvest personal data for identity theft by asking for passport scans and bank details for payroll. It's a double whammy, stealing money and a person's identity and crushing their hopes all at once. If it all sounds and feels overwhelming, it's meant to be. They want you to feel overwhelmed. They want you to feel like resistance is futile. But being overwhelmed isn't a strategy. The first, most powerful step we can all take is awareness. Just listening to this, understanding the scale of it, knowing the tactics, that's half the battle.
It really is. And again, more psychological tactics by the scammers. So based on everything in this report and your own experience, what are the key takeaways? What can people listening right now actually do to protect themselves?
Great question, Sue, because anytime we do one of our podcast episodes, key takeaways are so important. As I always say, knowledge is power.
Okay, first we have to graduate from the old advice. The classic line, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is, that still holds up. That's your gut instinct, and you should always listen to it. But as we've said, just checking for grammar isn't enough anymore.
Right. So what's the new advice? The new mantra is stop, challenge, protect. It means you take a moment. You don't react immediately. The scammers rely on urgency. So you stop. Then you challenge. you verify the request through a different trusted channel.
It adds another layer of profound tragedy to the whole thing. The person on the other end of the line might be just as desperate and terrified as the person they're trying to manipulate. It makes you realize you're not just dealing with a simple criminal, but the product of a vast international human trafficking network, creating that separation you mentioned.
Exactly. You get an email from your bank with a link? Don't click it. Close the email, open a completely new browser window, and type in your bank's web address yourself. You get a text from a delivery company. Don't click that link. Go to the official company website and use the official tracking number. You get a call from someone claiming to be from your phone provider? Hang up and call them back using the official number on your bill or their website. Precisely. And this industrial scale allows for incredible sophistication and specialization. One team might be responsible for making the initial contact and filtering potential targets. Once a victim is on the hook, they're passed to a more experienced closer who is an expert in emotional manipulation. They have psychologists who help write the scripts. They have dedicated tech teams who create the fake websites and apps. It is a business, and a brutally efficient and evil one.
That independent verification is so important. Creating a pause. What about our general digital hygiene? Are there things we should be doing every day to make ourselves a harder target? So that verification step is the critical circuit breaker. But what if the worst has already happened? What if someone listening right now has already fallen victim? It's happened, the money is gone, and they're sitting there in a state of shock and panic. What are the immediate practical steps they should take right now?
Absolutely. Let's talk about passwords. The days of using your pet's name for everything are long over. Every important account needs a unique, complex password. I know that's impossible to remember, which is why everyone should use a password manager. It's a secure vault that creates and stores complex passwords for you. You just have to remember one master password.
I am glad you brought up the password manager, Nick. You finally convinced me to use one of those a few years ago. It's a free app and so easy to use. If you go to any app store and type in password manager, you will find tons of them. Most of them are free, unless you want a premium version. But in my experience, you don't really get much more with the premium versions. The point is to just start using one. That is a simple step that can make a huge difference. Best of all, it's free.
It's a massive step. Another is getting better at spotting fake websites. Before you enter any personal or financial information, scrutinize the URL. Scammers will create clone sites with very similar addresses. Think yourbanksecurity.com instead of yourbank.com. Always look for the padlock icon and HTTPS in the address bar, but know that even scammers can get those now. The domain name itself is the most important clue. It is absolutely critical. Talk to your family, especially older relatives and younger ones who might be more vulnerable. Make it a normal conversation. The more we normalize talking about scams, the less power the criminals have. And report it. Even if you think it won't do any good, report it to the police, report it to the platform. Every report is a weapon against them.
Now, what do you recommend for someone who suddenly realizes they have been scammed? Like during an online purchase or while doing online banking? Should they hide it, wait to report it, or just do nothing and blame it on dumb luck?
Okay, this is absolutely critical. Here is where time is of the essence. The very first call you make is to your bank or credit card company, immediately. Don't email, don't wait, use the fraud hotline number on the back of your card. Tell them clearly that you have been the victim of a scam and these are fraudulent transactions. They can freeze your accounts, block any further payments, and start their internal process of trying to trace and recover the funds. The sooner you do this, the higher the chance, however small, of getting some money back. And always avoid doing any sensitive transactions like online banking on public Wi-Fi, like at a coffee shop or airport. It's much easier for criminals to intercept your data on an unsecured network. If you have to use it, use a VPN, a virtual private network, which encrypts your connection and keeps your data safe from prying eyes.
That's such an important point. So bank first, that's the top priority. What's next on the checklist?
Next, you have to assume your digital life is compromised. Change your passwords, all of them. Start with the most critical one, your email account, which is the key to everything else. Then your online banking, your social media, everything. The scammers may have installed spyware that's logging your keystrokes, or they may have tricked you into revealing information that gives them access to other accounts. Assume everything is compromised until you've secured it. I always advise to think worst case scenario. You know the old slogan, prepare for the worst, pray for the best. Another practical thing everyone can do is enable two-factor authentication on every single account that offers it. That extra code sent to your phone can be the one thing that stops them from getting back into your accounts, even if they have your password. 100%. It is the single best security upgrade you can give your digital life. After you've contacted your bank and started securing your accounts, then you report the crime. In the UK, you report it to Action Fraud. In the US, it's the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center, or IC3. Every country has a national reporting center. Get a crime reference number. This is vital for insurance and dealing with banks. And as we said before, even if they can't recover your money, the data is vital for building the bigger picture. Now, Sue, as you know, there's a lot of valuable information in the Global Anti-Scam Alliance UK report. I really think we have barely scratched the surface. The numbers and statistics pertaining to scams and frauds in the United Kingdom are both alarming and staggering. We encourage all our listeners to visit their website to learn more about the organization and the great work they are doing. One important item I want to bring up, Sue, is that if you have been scammed, please talk to someone. Do not suffer in silence. The shame thrives in silence. Talk to a trusted friend, a partner, a family member, or if that's not possible, contact a professional support service like Victim Support. You have been the victim of a crime, a sophisticated, calculated, psychological crime. You are not stupid. You are not to blame. Saying that out loud to someone who will listen without judgment is an incredibly important step in processing the trauma and taking back control.
That's fantastic, practical advice. Also, be sure and create a clear three-step plan for a moment of panic and chaos if you realize you are dealing with a scammer. Always secure your finances, secure your data, and secure your emotional well-being. It goes a long way towards helping you from becoming a victim.
He really does.
Anything else, Nick?
One last thing I wanted to mention, Sue, deals with voice cloning scams. We have received calls regarding those scams and seen numerous stories about them. I recommend every family create a safe question or a code word. This is specifically for those grandchild in trouble scams, which are going to get supercharged with AI voice cloning. The rule is, if anyone calls or texts asking for money in an emergency, no matter how convincing they sound, you must ask for the family code word or ask the secret question, like, what was the name of our first dog? If they can't answer it, it's a scam. Hang up.
Oh, that's brilliant. It's a simple, low-tech solution to a high-tech problem. What about for younger people, for our kids' generation?
For them, the conversation is more about privacy and skepticism. They're digital natives, but they can be too trusting. They overshare on social media, which gives scammers ammunition. They're also prime targets for job scams and shopping scams on platforms like TikTok and Instagram. The lesson is the same. Never trust an unsolicited message. And a legitimate company will never, ever conduct a hiring process entirely over a messaging app.
It all feels like we're building a fortress around our digital lives, which begs the question we touched on earlier, why is it so hard to just stop them, to kick down the doors of these scam factories and arrest the people in charge? So prevention is really the only viable cure, knowledge really is power in the world of scams.
Knowledge truly is power, and at this point, it's the most effective strategy we have. We can't arrest our way out of this problem when the criminals are always 10 steps ahead and a world away. But we can educate our way out of it. We can make the population so aware, so skeptical, that the scammer's business model collapses because not enough people fall for it. That's the goal. That's why conversations like this are so important.
Well, that's why we do this type of work here on Behind the Scams. We want everyone to be scam smart. It is our mission and our goal to educate as many people as possible. In fact, our nonprofit, Scam Prevention, has grown so much, we have had to expand out to a full-blown scam prevention media network. Our podcast can now be found on its own website, which is behindthescams.org. In addition to that, we have stampoutscams.org, where we provide scam prevention tools like blog postings, PowerPoints, scam news, and a host of other scam prevention tools. And finally, we have scamtv.org, which is the video arm of our nonprofit. Together, they form SOS Media Network.
That's right, Sue. Scam and scammers have become such a massive problem, it was too much for one website to handle. So we created the SOS Media Network. We have created our own scam prevention cartel to deal with this problem. Except this cartel was formed to help, not to steal from people.
On that important note, Nick, I think it's time to conclude this episode of Behind the Scams. I'm Sue. Thank you for listening. And as always, stay safe, stay smart, and look out for one another. Bye for now.
And this is Nick. As always, thanks for listening. Goodbye from Behind the Scams and the SOS Media Network.
You've just heard Nick and Sue walk through one of the most important scam reports ever published. A report that reveals just how deeply fraud has woven itself into daily life for millions of people. Modern scams aren't amateur tricks anymore. They're engineered psychological operations built to manipulate emotions, exploit trust, and overwhelm people with a level of sophistication that can fool anyone. From shopping scams and impersonation calls to romance fraud, job cons, tech support manipulation, and AI-driven deepfake deception, the threat landscape is evolving faster than most people realize. And as we heard today, the consequences aren't just financial. They include shame, emotional trauma, isolation, and the devastating feeling of being violated by someone you trusted. But the most important takeaway is this. Awareness works. Talking about scams works. Reporting them works. Sharing information works. Every conversation chips away at the advantage these global criminal networks rely on. Every listener who becomes more cautious, more skeptical, and more informed makes the entire system safer for the people around them. Behind the Scams exists for exactly that reason, to help you understand what's out there, how it works, and how to protect yourself and the people you love. If this episode opened your eyes, share it with someone who needs to hear it. Talk to your parents, your kids, your friends. Encourage them to pause before clicking, to question before paying, and to verify before trusting. The scammers may be organized, global, and persistent, but so is the community fighting back. On behalf of SOS Media Network, thank you for listening. Stay alert, stay empowered, and remember, scammers never stop, but neither do we. This is Miles, signing off from Behind the Scams.